Amon, take a look, check. Another half minute and we're ready to roll. Nine hara. Here's Rafi Jacobs. Rafi, you'll be a regular student this year. I'm looking for regular students to give them knowledge and wisdom. All right, Vic, we're missing. What can we do? But he's got a simcha in the States. I found out what the problem is. Yomo, the problem is everyone is overwhelmed by gittin, and it turns out that that Rabbi Glassman was correct when he won a shterikel in America. That I don't want to repeat what he said. It's not nice for me to repeat it. But he said that the fact that they don't make my courses obligatory is a disgrace for the kollel, etc., etc. But I'm very happy. The few new ones I pick up make me very happy. But it's a shame that students come here and they're overwhelmed by gittin, not to take advantage of the uniqueness of Bris Kollel. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Okay, we'll take names later. Let me roll. It's 9:05. And time presses, and this was a big week. If I'm to judge by the weekend papers, either will be the greatest state in the world by Tuesday night, or the state will have disappeared. There's going to be no middle road. I never saw a weekend of news that was such garbage and foolishness and playing around and hunting and guessing. And Shmuley Boteach's daughter opened up a kosher sex shop in Tel Aviv, continuing the tradition of his book, Kosher Sex. That was about the only interesting article I saw in all the newspapers. The other article, which I'm losing sleep over, and no one has protested, I can't believe it. If you saw Yediot on Friday, on the front page of Yediot, there is Gans doing how many Yisurim the Oraita gets Malkus, doesn't get Malkus, what do you say, Yitzchak? Shaving with a razor. You saw the picture or not? They have a picture of Netanyahu eating apples and a picture of Gans shaving with a razor, his whole face filled with cream. And let Satma Hasidim get their face smacked. They're stumped from Satma Hasidim. His whole family is Satma. His grandparents were Satma. Everyone in America from that survived the Holocaust is Satma. And this is what came out of Satma Hasidim. Don't anyone criticize YU. Okay. Today is Sunday. Let off a little steam. Now we'll get serious. September 15th, 2019. And I say hello to my wonderful students in front of me. And to all my students listening across the wide expanse of the Jewish universe, Jack asked me an interesting question, and Jack doesn't realize if he read everything the Rebbe published, he would have the answer, because I quote the Rav word by word dealing with your question. And it's very, very simple. The Rebbe is telling everyone, we're all Kohanim, what is the purpose of a Kohen? To bring people closer to Torah. That's what Rabbanim have to do. And I quote to you, there was a very famous Jewish sociologist, Charles Liebman. Do you remember the name?
Yes.
The new generation sits here with an ignorant look. Make believe you heard the name, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Charlie Liebman became famous off the tzaras of a young rabbi named Aaron Rothkopf. Remember the article. All right. You can always ask me for copies. I'll make more copies for the Kollel. So I'm the case study in the article, 1961. In that article, the sociological reality of Orthodox Judaism in the United States, circa 1960, Charlie has a wonderful line. He says, there's one thing all observant Jews agree upon, that we have to observe Torah, and we have to try to bring every Jew to observe Torah, because as I've said more than once, we're part of Am Yisrael, and if a Jew's Mechalel Shabbos in China, it affects my Judaism as well to a certain degree. That was Charlie Liebman's statement, and he's absolutely right. And he says, even Satma will agree with this statement. The question is, where do you put the pressure? Where is the fine line? So we are all like Chabad in the sense that I would like to see every Jew in the world show a Torah mitzvah. The difference is I spend my time learning and writing and teaching and That's what I believe in. I'm not going to stand on a street corner with tefillin. Chabad has a different approach. Every Jew, we can put on tefillin. But the pendulum is somewhere in the middle. You follow me? You're absolutely right. It's not that we're all Chabad. We're all Torah Jews. And we have to live with this basic expression. Right now, in the Hasidic world, there's tremendous outreach. New Yitzchak, Chabad, you know. Breslov, you know. You know where else there is outreach today? Bells. Bells has become so big already that there's so... Remember my vort that after the Holocaust, Hasidus changed its whole stunts. How did Hasidus begin? We have to reach out to every Jew. After the Holocaust, Hasidus changed its whole stunts. They were afraid. Nothing is left. Only Chabad, you have to give the 6th Rebbe, and particularly the 7th Rebbe, credit. They had the guts to say, we're going to go back to the Baal Shem Tov's approach and reach out to every Jew. Today, Bells, the Rebbe, is not a Gadol Hador learning, but he's certainly in Manhigut, the Gadol Hador. Listen to me carefully. And what he did, Yesh Meyayin, Bells was totally wiped out by the Holocaust. The previous Rebbe, Reb Aralo, his great uncle, his wife, and what was it, 11 children were wiped out. If I don't have the number of children right, I'm not far off. Nothing remained. And this is a great nephew from the Bulgari Rebbe, from his younger, it's a nephew actually, it's not a great nephew, it's a nephew. It's his youngest brother, the Bulgari Rebbe, Reb Mordechai, who remarried in Israel. His wife and children were wiped out too. He remarried, by the way, a lady from a Mizrahi background, a big Zionist. I taught members of her family. But he remarried, and they had a girl and a boy. And this boy was born 1948. Let me see that I have it right. And they made a shidduch with the Vishnu Rebbe's daughter, the previous, we're going back two Rebbe's, and they got married in 1966. Check it out. I believe it was 1966. He was 18 years old. Yeah, 66. And they took him away from his... They raised him in Yerushalayim when he was 8, 9 years old. They told his mother, we'd like to take him to Yerushalayim. The Elter Chassidim, the few who survived, want to raise him. And he became... She agreed, which was not easy for her. And he was raised, and he became the Rebbe. And he, great outlook, understanding. They were the first, today, if you're a, who hears a Belzer Chassid? Is there a Belzer Yingle Danshin in class? If there's a Belzer Chassid here, they give you guidance, what to go into. After you learn the yeshiva, it's not indefinite. They tell you go to Machon Lev. There are plenty of Belz Chassidim in Machon Lev. They tell you to go to another school, what to do, get a profession. The men work, the women work, and now the Rebbe has outreach. And Belz has an expression, if you're born a Belzer, no matter what you went through in life, you die a Belzer. There is, I'll tell you with tears in my eyes, my father-in-law, remember, my wife comes from, her mother was a fourth-generation American, but her father was an immigrant. He came after World War I, a little kid. Knew in Europe, as given a Belzai Yingle, mit payas, the works, and he was born that way. I know he came to America, he lived in Brooklyn, and then they moved to the Bronx. They were always Shomer Shabbos, but they weren't Belzai Yinglach. And where does he die? He winds up in Israel, in our house. In our house, after about 6-7 months, we transferred him to the Belzer Senior Citizens that was in back of Machne Yehuda. It's no longer there. It used to be there. That's where Belz began. So, and that's where he died. So take a look. He was born in Belz and died in Belz. Just what they say. Okay. Now, let's move on. Let's go one step further. Very fascinating two emails that I'll relate to you, people listening, that fit right in. So what did we say last week? Last week we dealt with Chabad and this tremendous question, inviting someone to your home who's driving Shabbos, coming Shabbos, driving there, driving back, even if they come in before Shabbos, but they're driving back on Shabbos. Or all that we do today, Ribbono Shel Olam, when I was in the rabbin, and I told you 1,000 times over, we opened the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County, and the original minyan, we had nowhere near a Shomer Shabbos minyan. The original minyan were people who owed Dr. Weinstein a favor, the Baal Tshuva, the founder of the shul, in memory of his father, so they did him a favor after he operated on them, and they came to the shul Friday night, Shabbos morning, to help make a minyan. So this is a tremendous question. So we saw last week the Chabad approach, the heart of Chabad, the Gemara in Shabbos, Tov sheyechalalu Shabbat achad kedei sheyishma Shabbatot habe. And the famous Gemara that David Melech Yisrael is dead, you don't do a darn thing, and Atinat Ben Yomo, if he's sick on Shabbos, we do everything to save the kid, to do every chilul Shabbos under the sun. Tov sheyechalalu Shabbat achad keshuk Shabbat habet habetei. And this becomes halacha lemaisa. The Chafetz Chaim paskin that way with getting Jews out of Russia, getting whatever you have to do on Shabbos, absolutely get them out, get them out. I showed you the Rav, getting Jews out on Yom Kippur, the Rav, Rav Aaron Kotler, what I told you last week. And this is halacha lemaisa. When it came to the Mossad and the work we're doing in the Mossad, so I told you the background. Michael Miller said in class that when he went to Russia, he was told, forget about Shabbat. And I explained what Chaim Drukman Paskin, and when yours truly was tapped on the shoulder by the Mossad, by 1980, I took a different approach, and I think I was correct. Yitzchak was one of my shulchim, and he agrees with me. All right, but tov sheyechalalu Shabbat achad kedei sheyishmu Shabbatot habei. Then you have the whole question of making a cheshbon. Look, he's going to be mechal Shabbos anyway. So what am I doing wrong? Instead of driving to the movies to the yid at the shopping, he's coming to a Shabbos suda. So here's an interesting email from a rabbi, Mike Schatz. And he tells me a story. My shir reminded him of a story my aunt told me, which must have happened around 1958. It concerns the attitude of the more right-wing conservative rabbis you were comparing to Chabad and outer and other outreach. She was studying Tarat Mishpacha with the rabbi of the local conservative temple, who was a musmach of Chaim Berlin. So it wasn't that strange. As far as I know, he remained totally Shomer Shabbat. And she was studying Tat Mishpacha with a conservative rabbi before wedding. It's hard to conceive of that today, but you have to understand, this was a time when there were Chaim Berlin graduates, Torah Vadas graduates, Yeshivas Mitzchochanan graduates. It's before your time, though, but I remember it very clearly. And they were in the rabbinate, and they were totally from outside of a shul with men and women sitting together. Okay? So, while she's studying with him, the phone rang, and it was a woman said she and her husband had recently moved to the suburban town where the shul was, and realized they were too far from the shul to walk on Rosh Hashanah. She asked the rabbi if they should drive to shul, and the rabbi said yes. After he hung up the phone, he said to my aunt, quote, you must be wondering why I said that. If she were asking whether she would drive to shul or daven at home, I would have told her to daven at home. But if that were her question, she should have looked where the shul was before she bought the house. She was really asking whether she drive to shul or drive to the beauty parlor. There is no way I'll tell her to drive to the beauty parlor. So you see, once again, it's the same cheshbon hanefesh that you see in some of the tshuvot that I quoted, particularly from Community Service Division, YU, that, let's be honest, what are they doing? They're driving here, there, everywhere. So at least if they drive to shul, we have that advantage that they're in a makom kadosh. If they drive to a sudat Shabbat, they're in a makom kadosh. All right, now let's come to the heart of today's shir, Rabbi Asher Weiss. Rabbi Asher Weiss needs no introduction. A few years ago when I mentioned this name, no one outside of Israel knew who he was. Today, he's become an international figure in Woodmere. They bring him to Woodmere. They bring him to Los Angeles. And Rav Asher Weiss is one of the great blessings that we have in modern times. His background is second-generation Holocaust. His father became a Kloisenberger Chassid. Like many Jews I knew, the Kloisenberger Rebbe was such a dominant figure, such an inspiring figure in the Holocaust, that these people, I know Litvisha, who from Shanghai, who later became, heard stories about the became Kloisenberger Chassidim, and his father became a Kloisenberger. His father was a big Talmud Chacham. His father, they offered, Reb Moshe Feinstein pleaded with his father to go into Rabbanit to become a Dayan. He was a big, big Talmud Chacham, but his father wanted to make a living, and he was a very, very successful real estate man. So Rabbi Asher Weiss came from a home where he lacked for nothing. Brooklyn, the usual story. He came in Aliyah as a teenager, and he never went back. He continued learning, and he's married. Tomorrow's class, Professor Morty Paragon will be here. He's married to a relative of Morty's family. I don't know if it's his family, his wife's family, but he's married to a relative of the Paragon family, and the man has a Goynish Kaf, a fabulous memory, a fabulous amount of knowledge, and he's a posek mufak, and he's at home in all different worlds. He speaks Hebrew, English, Yiddish. English is obviously, Yiddish is probably his most native language, but English is his native street language. And he picked up Hebrew as a teenager here, so he's totally at home in three different languages. And he's mukubal now, and he knows what's going on. You can't fool him. He knows the score. So I'm quoting from Mitrat Hashir, Chelik Sheni. There are three volumes out, Shelik and Shevet. I just quoted you, Michael. You went here, you'll pick it up on the tape. Siman Chafchet. Okay. And I'll show you what a small world it is. I said to you last week, he's writing the Tshuva, Kvoji Chahuvi Yakiri Mabitztorah Mezakarabim Harav Hagon Reb Avraham David Levavitz Libowitz Shlita Machabes Seif Beniflam Palo Alto, California. No, go and dream that this person who he's writing the tshuva to, his family is listening to the shirim. I got an email from Dr. William Gvirtz, who I quoted before. He's no youngster. I think he's retired already. He's a little younger than we are. He's a great genius, Yitzchak, in the calendar, in mathematics. And he's probably the greatest living authority on the Hebrew calendar, Kiddush HaChodesh, the Rambam, and all that goes with it. So he writes to me, the addressee in Palo Alto is my SIL's older brother, Rabbi Avi Leibowitz. SIL, I finally figured out, sister-in-law's older brother. The world has no mercy on older people like myself. Bad, and they got to read stupid emails, and no one has to speak anymore. When you talk to someone, then no one has to talk to you. When I call, what the heck did you call me for? Send me an email. Don't waste my time. Ribbono shel Olam, someone calls. How are you? Give a bracha, be a mensch. So SIL, Rabbi, it's my sister-in-law's older brother, Rabbi Levavitz. Now, my sister, BTW, what is BTW? Can anyone help me? Did you do basic training in the Israeli army? Are you from or not from? It's a mitzvah, Where did you get a tour? I don't know. I don't see in the Rambam that it says, because you grew up in Lawrence or Tinek, that you're putter from the army. But it's bad enough in the army. Everything works with abbreviations. You follow? Here, Ribbono shel Olam. By the way, my sister-in-law's son, it should be, is a new Rosh Yeshiva at YU, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz. You see what a small world it is? So now we know to whom this tshuva is addressed. And Palo Alto. And it's exactly this question. He wants to avodat hakodesh kiruv rechokim. Jack, you see, it's not a chabadnik. He's a Jew, but avodat hakodesh kiruv rechokim. He wants to invite them for Friday night. And are you allowed? They're going to drive. It's Chilul Shabbos, and this is his question. And then he gets, he says right away that I, you know, in the introduction here, look, he's touching what happens here. What happens here in the introduction is a very interesting question. When you get a Shela, this has been widely discussed, and it comes up also in the documentary on the Rev that I was privileged to bring into the world when Saul Berman spoke. So people jumped on me, you know, he said, you have to see the documentary, you understand the criticism, but it's a legitimate question. When you get a question, do you have a right to say, I want to be Mekil? I want to be Mekil. Do you have a right to say that? And then you're going to have to find the sources to support that attitude. If you can't, then you can't be Mekil. But do you have a right to say it? Or no, should you take a She'elah and just be like Machon Lev? They once gave me a tour. There are parts of Machon Lev where you have to cover your whole body and everything. You got to walk in. There can be no germs. It has to be a sterile atmosphere, a sterile environment because of the research going on, not to affect the chemicals. So how do you view answering a question? Rafi, I walk into the lab and I have to be sterile. I'm not allowed to have any prejudice. Oh no, I want to be, okay. So I'll tell you, la halacha, there are two instances where you get a sheila, where you absolutely have to say, I want to be mekil. One is aguna and one is mamzeret. It's well known, and you don't have to be a giant of Torah to know that. Just be a tyro in Eben Ezra, and you'll know what I'm talking about. Aguna and mamzeret, absolutely. But only if we can justify it afterwards. Every other question, basically, you come in, you say, I don't know what the answer is, let me see what the sources say. On this issue, Rav Asher Weiss says, I understand, and Kiruv, and the Friday night meal, I'm going to try to see if we can't be Matya. And he begins to tshuva with, again, speaking about the Gemara we quoted on Avodah Zarah, Dafav Amid Bet, which is the source. He's standing on one side of the river. If he can take the treif bottle of wine without your handling it to him, there's no lifneiva lo titein michshol. Lifneiva lo titein michshol is only if he's on the other side of the river, and there's no way he can get the bottle. So here, you're standing on the same side of the river. He's not going to drive to shul. He's going to drive somewhere else. So, fine. There's no lifnei iver d'oraita. That goes without saying. You're not forcing him to drive. You're telling him, you know, he quotes from Shlomo Zalman. You're telling him, I'll get you a place to stay. You'll have a place to sleep. You'll be here for Shabbat. And nevertheless, he doesn't listen to you. You're not forcing anything down his throat. But here, Rav Asher Weiss raises an issue that no one else raised. All the sources I spoke about, Rav Moshe Steinberg, Rav Shlomo Zalman, no one else raised this issue. And this issue is based upon a shita in Tosfot that is a unique concept that Tosfot introduces. Not all the Rishonim accepted it, but the Rush does accept it, and you can trace it all the way down to the Shulchan Aruch as well. And this concept is known as Misayeya Lidei Aveira. You're helping a person do a sin.
Where is this going?
Next words, Mesechet Shabbat Daf Gimel Amid Aleph. And it's dealing there with, it's the whole question of someone puts bread into an oven before Shabbat, when do you have to take it out before it is baked, before it's an Isidio, right? And get involved that whole question. And here is Tosfot, Mikomakom, Isidarabanhan, Mihu Ika, the Shechayav, Lahafrisho, Me'isa. And you'll see Tosfot, and what Tosfot means is, yes, technically it's not a lift me'iva. Technically, he can do whatever he wants. Technically, you're not helping him. But if you see a Jew during an Isa, you have to do everything in your power to stop him. And if you don't stop him, you are helping him. And this is the issue. You can see all the sources in Rav Asher Weiss, but this is the issue he raises. Now, what Rav Asher Weiss doesn't know, and I'll throw it out, and if anyone sees Rav Asher Weiss, you can tell him in relation to this tshuva, I want to add something. Bididi ha-bi-uvda. What happened? You're coming aliyah, you're living in Israel, Kanaim Hara, I'm living here more than 50 years. Occasionally it happens. A car will stop and ask you directions on Shabbos. What do you do? And this is a Jew. It's not America where the chveis, unless you're in Borough Park, but even Borough Park, who drives on Shabbos? It has to be a guy. It's not America where AID, artificial insemination donor, you can be Matir Reb Moshe because the majority are Gentiles. It's Israel. Who's asking you? So I wrote to Reb Moshe Feinstein. I never got an answer because by the 1970s, Reb Moshe was surrounded by people who filtered out the questions he would answer. This was a political issue. It had political ramifications. It's dealing with Israel and Chilul Shabbos and the public thoroughfare. I will assume he got my letter, but he didn't answer. Fine. So, 1978, I spent the Shabbat in Boston with my Rebbe. I asked the Rav many, many questions that Shabbat. Among the questions, I asked him this exact question. And the Rav said to me, again, quoting the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, it's no lifnei iver, absolutely give him the best possible directions, lema'et et chilul Shabbat. Follow me exactly what whisper, they're going to drive anywhere, they're going to drive here. The best directions possible. That's what the Rav answered. I came back after my visit to the States, and I told Reb Aaron, we used to call him the babe, it's hard for me to say, Reb Aaron, but we used to call him the babe. He had a big baby face, big face, big round. I have grandchildren like that, granddaughters and grandsons like that, baby faces. Great granddaughters and great grandsons. I'm skipping a generation. So I told Reb Aaron what the Rav said. He disagreed. He said to me, he quoted this Tosfos, the Rush, Messiah Eladei Avera, you're helping a person do a sin. A guy's driving, all right, you don't have to tell him, go fly a kite, you idiot, you Russia, you Machalos Shabbos, you good for nothing, it's not gonna, no, you don't have to say that to him, just say to him, I don't know. Like people, I ask directions more than once in the world, and people tell you, we're not locals. Anachnu lo makomiyim. We're not locals. You could answer in a nice way. But don't give directions because you're helping someone be Machalos Shabbos.
He already is.
Michael, Reb Asher Weiss will agree with you, but that's what the Rav said. But Reb Aaron felt it's Mesayeli. Reb Aaron's entitled to his opinion, okay? Mesayeli de'aveira. Don't minimize it, see? Believe me, it hurts me to see a person would ask me Shabbos. It's very hard for me to give him directions, but all right, I have to follow the Rav. It's my Rebbe. I don't follow the Rav.
I'm not a local.
No, no, no. If someone will stop me on Shabbos, I give them directions like the Rav told me. Wants to follow Reb Aaron, you have to tell a white lie. Leman HaShalom. Listen, the Amshin of a Rebbe, you know the famous story with the Amshin of, I've told it over the dead generations, the Amshin of, the original Amshin of a Rebbe in Bayit Vagan. So this goes back when I came in Aliyah, people were talking about it. So we're talking more than 50, 60 years ago. So a Jew from Tel Aviv, a survivor, made it in Israel, and he drives into Yerushalayim on Shabbos, and he's wandering around Bayit Vagan, And he stops the Rebbe on Shabbos to ask directions. Like I began the class a half hour ago. How insensitive Yediyot Achronot is that they show a picture on the front page of Benny Gantz doing an Issa D'Oraita. You understand? No one gives a hoot. No one even understands. No one has yelled. I haven't heard one word on the news that I got to just spoke out, that my people spoke out, the Yaminiyim, that Ben Gavir spoke out, that the Rav Tau spoke. I haven't heard one word on the news that anyone called them to order. If anyone's listening, please call Yediyah to order. So stop the umption of a Rebbe, and he asked for directions. So the umption of a Rebbe started to cry. It's a true story. And the guy, what do you call Lama Taboche? And the Rebbe said, I survived the Holocaust. I came to Israel to see Jews being Machalo Shabbos. Why shouldn't I cry? So the people were moved by the Rebbe's words. They were survivors. They were survivors. So they said, they broke into Yiddish already, and they said, what do we do with the car? The Rebbe says, you leave it here. A car was a rarity yet. They said, but someone might harm it. It's the kids will come and see a car. He said, I'll have Chassidim watch it. And these people became Shomer Shabbos and big supporters of the Yom Shinava. So, yeah, you have to have that ability. Not everyone has that ability. So, alright, the Rav says, tell them, according to Rav Aaron, you would have to worry about what Rav Usher Weiss raised here, the whole question of Messiah Lidei Avera. Now, in the Tshuva, he goes further, and the whole question, are you obligated, how can you say, give them, invite them, don't you have to tell them more? Isn't there a mitzvah of tochacha? And this is a very fascinating question. You can do a PhD thesis on the whole question of tochacha b'zman hazeh. So you'll see the sources. He quotes the Chafetz Chaim from the Bir Halacha, that you see, if people are mezidim, tochacha doesn't apply. Tochacha only applies if it's a Jew that understands the language, that is part of it, that can accept, that will understand, you say Chilul Shabbos, you say, how can you be this way? Who was your father? Who was your grandfather? Where do you come from? Where are you going? Dam yat lifnei mi'atom meid. If a Jew doesn't understand that, if he said, to use the words that the Chafetz Chaim uses, parkeo, he throws it all away. Anapikairis. He threw it away. Tochacha doesn't apply. So, of course, now you have a very delicate question. The Jews we're dealing with, tochacha, they evidently know something about Yiddishkeit. They are coming to your house. Maybe you should be mochiach. Maybe you should tell them off. And here you see his insight. And this is a man who understands the generation. In our generation, the biggest problem we have is not a problem of shogeg and not a problem of mezit. It's a problem of a mindset. And this mindset is one magic word, pluralism. And what does pluralism mean? Why does a guy named Aaron Rakefet rant and rage when someone calls him an Orthodox Jew? There is no such thing as an Orthodox Jew. Just as there's no such thing as a conservative Jew. Just as there's no such thing as a reformed Jew. All we have is the Torah that God gave us. Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaalpeh, Naaseh V'Nishma. That's to define being a Jew, to live a Jewish life. You have to observe Judaism. Some observe it more. Some lo aleinu observe it less. Some know nothing about it. But when you take the approach, this pluralism, then the average person's mind is, you're Orthodox. I'm conservative. I'm Reformed. Shalom al Yisrael. I dealt with a wonderful lady from Mintz in Los Angeles. And she got out, and this lady had Jewish feeling and worked for the Jewish community. And she was impressive. And as someone, as you know, heavily involved in the communist era, she was totally Jewish. You looked at her, you looked at her husband, there was no mistake that all four grandparents were Jewish. It wasn't the usual case of the father's not Jewish, the mother is Jewish, etc. And it meant everything to her, her son, and where he would go to college and education, conquer America. But there was a pull to Yiddishkeit there. And I remember I was trying to convince her, you have to walk to shul on Shabbos. And her key answer was, well, that's what you feel, but my conservative rabbi told me I'm allowed to drive. And you see, that answer is the heart of the biggest dilemma that we have today. Go into the Jewish agency, sit in with the Board of Governors, sit in with Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, and hear the way this man speaks, the way the Board of Governors speak. It is unbelievable. They are as distant from understanding what Yiddishkeit is about as I am from understanding Mao Zedong's Chinese oratory. I think they're more distant. I could probably learn a little Chinese, rather good verstanden, and maybe frozen some Yiddish, considering that General Cohn fought for the Chinese takeover from the kingdom of before. But this is the heart of the problem. It's, you can take the Pew report from today to tomorrow, and you can show where there's no observance, the Jew disappears, he intermarries. You don't have to be a genius to understand this. Take every Jewish name of the New York Times for the last 100 years. Where are their grandchildren today? Ox and Salzburg and Warburg. Take every Jewish name. Schiff. And this is the heart of the problem. And here, these Jews, it's not a question of rebuking them. It's a question of being able to teach them the basics of what Torah is about. To the Western mind, this is a total alien concept. You are limited. A human being is not free to do whatever he wants. How are we raised in the Western world? How are you raised in a secular school system in Israel? How was Uri Zohar raised? He cried when he became a Baal Tshuva, the most famous Baal Tshuva we have in the state of Israel. Uri Zohar said, the most precious part of my inheritance, of my heritage, I never was taught about the Torah. What is Western world? You're free to do whatever you want, as long as you don't break the windows of your neighbor next door. Isn't this what we're taught? Isn't what we grew up on? Isn't this de Blasio? Isn't this Trump? Isn't this Obama? Isn't this Clinton? Isn't this, take any American president in modern times, the concept that someone will limit himself, that he can't be Mechalel Shabbos, that he can't be Treif, that he can't, pardon me, sleep around with any woman or man he wants to? This is alien to Western civilization. Look at Avigdor Lieberman. It's a perfect example of Western civilization, freedom of choice. Why do you... My wife is from, he says. My daughter is from. At home, I only eat kosher. On the outside, I couldn't care less. I'm free. My wife will not eat what I eat. He says it openly. Take a look at, this is the Western world. And here, Rabbi Moshe Weiss, this is really understanding where we're at. And therefore, the whole question of Tochecha really doesn't play a role here. The Jew beyond us, beyond the Torah world, is a Tinok Shenishba. his, what does a tinok shenishpa mean? And here you come back to the Gemara, and it's an amazing thought. The Gemara in Klal Gadol, that someone converts a mitgayer ben ha'akam, and he didn't know there was a Shabbos in the world. So the Geirat Eschal, I mean, that's a very important concept. Reb Moshe builds on it, and anyone who deals with the contemporary problem, we have to build on that Gemara, that you see the Geirat Eschal, even if you don't know what Shabbos was, he converted to what he thought Judaism was. But what does it mean, Hamid? If you live among the Gentiles, of course you're not going to know what Judaism is about. You're going to be influenced by ideas. You take the Rambam, Hilchat Mamrim, Perek Gimel, look at the first few halachot there, you'll see the Karoyim, that's the original people. Afterwards, you can't criticize, you can't be angry, that you can't apply what the Gemara says, Moridin ve'ein Malin, Malin ve'ein Moridin, because these people were raised in ignorance. They're tinokot shenishparu. So therefore he feels the whole concept of tolchecha, the whole concept of misayei l'dei avera would not apply on the contemporary scene. Okay, and it's very hard to neglect what Rabbi Schweiss is saying, to abrogate. He's very powerful here. And then, and he says, and these people, the Rochalin Chachilonim Bismanenu, Dintinok Shenishba Yeshlahem, the Ainla Dimbehem Bidin Mezid. And you can't say they're doing it on purpose. You can't say, V'vadai Ain Lechem Din Mumar. And they're Jews, and the trick of outreach is how to spot. And believe me, it is difficult, because someone raised with freedom, he looks at you. I know people in America in the 50s, I can still remember conversations when Yiddishkeit was not as popular as today. Today, in America, Baruch Hashem, even the New York Times knows what Shmirat Shabbat is, and Kashrut, and perhaps Tarat Mishpacha. But I remember people would look at you, what, you willingly, you don't turn the TV on Shabbos? It was like beyond their comprehension that you would willingly desist from doing something that appears to them so innocent and so negligible and so small, and they can't start to understand how all the little no-nos become such a positive experience. And this is Tamu Ru'u Ki Tov. If you have confidence in Torah, then let them taste it. V'tiru Ki Tov. And Baruch Hashem, I need not tell you that today the Tshuva movement, it's a major industry. It's not a small matter. We're all involved. Chabad leads the way. NCSY, which took over from YU Torah Leadership Seminar, Ar Sameach, Eish HaTorah, Devar Yerushalayim. The outreach is major and great success. Problem is with the second generation. With the second generation already, parents made such sacrifice and came back and did so much. And the second generation, what they do, what they accomplish, look at the world around us, and you have to learn how to deal with the second generation. A lot has been written on this. It's more so a problem in the Haredi world than in the open, in the what we'll call the YU Torah world, because in our world people have more choice. We don't say to them there's only one way to go. At least we shouldn't say to them. They have more choice, they have more freedom. But in the Haredi world, this is a major problem when they're fenced in, when the parents have PhDs and MDs and all types of degrees, and the kids are told, you can't go to college. But all right, even the Haredi world, Baruch Hashem, with more self-confidence, is starting to blossom. Now, later in the Tshuva, he also makes the point of, let's be honest, the Yitera Mizun Yirel Echura, that if they don't come to your house for Shabbos, they're certainly going to be Mechalel Shabbos. The halo, listen to what he lists out here. You see where he's living. He's with it. Halo Adam Chiloni Mechalel Shabbat Bechol Sha'ah. Bahadlokat Chashmal. Alright? Turn on lights, on and off. Bahavarat Eish. He's cooking. Bishimish Bekelim Elektronium. All types of computers, etc. Beishun, Benesia Berecha Bechulu. We can't stop them. But those that will come to our house, at least as long as they are in our house, they will not be Mechalel Shabbos. And then he quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he reaches the conclusion that absolutely halacha lemaisa, he feels we can be lenient and do everything we can to reach out to them. And he says, if you want to be machmir, the chumra becomes a kula, because look what's going to happen. If you don't attempt to reach out, we've lost them forever. U'bal nefesh ra'uy lo lahachmir b'hat salat nefashat. Lehitametz b'chol os lashiv leiv banim el avotam de'ein b'zeh mishaya yedei ovdei aveira el a mitzvah rabbah u'gedola. So I need not tell you, you now, Yitzchak, you asked me halacha l'maisa, alright? Rav Moshe Feinstein opposed. Our starting point was with the Mishnah halachot. Not total opposition, but caught in the middle. But wow, what we saw, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, and now you see Rav Usher Weiss, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Alright? Yesh al mi lismoch. You got your answer, Yitzchak? Yesh al mi lismoch. Rav Aaron, he quoted Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He told
him.
Alright, he felt that for a Sudat Shabbat, Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's not Messiah de Avera, they're going to be Mechala Shabbos elsewhere. That's what Rav Aaron said. But back in the 70s, we didn't discuss this issue. We just discussed someone stops you. Okay. Now let me show you halacha lemaisa. And I have to tell you, I'm trying, Rafi, I'm trying to convince myself too, because halacha lemaisa, I'm one ledge below Reb Moshe's. We'll come back to Reb Moshe yet. But I'm trying to convince myself. Watch. Are you going to be regulars in the class, or you're visiting today? Regular. Okay, so let me... Where do you stand? How are you? Are you coming, or this is just chad pami? Chad pami, okay. Send me glass here. Fill in names and email, so in case chas v'chalila, you have to call off a class, an emergency, I can let you know. I hope only if any class has to be called off, I can tell you in advance, and it should be either for a Brit of a great-grandchild or to make my wife happy. It's also a big mitzvah, to put it mildly. All right. I'm now quoting from Jewish Action, Spring 2019. And they have a very interesting section there. I have to tell you, Jewish Action is published by the OU, and spring 2019. This past spring, it's volume 70. No, yeah, I'd say that's enough spring. Effie Wagner, Ellie Wagner, how do you relate to Ellie?
My brother.
That's your brother, and one second, and let's get Stuart is your father, and Steve is your uncle, and Lisa is your aunt. Linda, I should say.
Oh, Linda's daughter.
Lisa, Lisa, your aunt, right?
Tammy.
Why? Okay, Tammy, right. It's Linda, Tammy. And this is your wife, I guess.
I'm a chatami, but maybe whenever I can, I'll follow
up. And what's your name?
Tova.
Tova. Oh, Tova is good. It's a famous name in our world. You know why? I don't have to tell you. Tova Lichtenstein's named after her great-grandmother, Gutta.
Yes.
Gutta. Ah, Effie Wagner. Wow. And you don't mind missing time? What's the Gemara? Gittin? You're not shaking that you'll fail the exam in Gittin? You might as well learn Menachat Ozvachim, then you can shake. But Gittin is kid's play. Learn the Cheskat HaBatim with Tosfot there.
Nowadays, Gittin has very few practical implications.
Today, everyone knows Gittin at the age of 3 already. God help me, including my own family. I don't exempt myself. Okay, Baruch Hashem. I'm a Catholic. I don't believe in divorce, but that's a different story. And I'm very happy to say that my one of my elder grandsons, who's very with it and knows the world, agreed with his grandfather. It's rare that a grandson should agree with a grandfather. He actually agreed with me. I said I'm in favor of going back to the old shidduch system, that boys and girls don't go out. Grandparents and parents meet, and they know each other for generations, and they put the boy and girl together. They meet under the chuppah. And my grandson agrees with me. Baruch Hashem.
He's the only one of the finest
adults. What?
Yitzchak,
don't be so cynical. And there's a book I read in high school, Doc Shapiro. Remember Doc Shapiro? Oh, you didn't go to MTA. Dr. Benjamin Shapiro, he taught in TA in the 20s, the 30s, into the 40s. Then he retired, but he loved yeshiva so much, he ran the high school library. So Doc, he had a lisp, but he said to me, I have a good book for you. And he gives me this book. Am I sorry I didn't save the title? It was by some Jew who came to America, an immigrant, made it big on 7th Avenue. Effie, do you know what 7th Avenue is? The shmata business. The Jews ran it. Today it's all China, but then some Jews became multimillionaires. Some of the people you know from Whitmer, I can tell you where their money comes from. It's the shmata business, the grandparents. So he writes a memoir in English, and he writes how he came from a Hasidic background, and he said, my parents made the shidduch. I was 18. The girl was 17. We met under the chuppah. And he said, I never saw her before. She was the greatest gift that God gave me in my life. And he writes, what a wonderful marriage and what a helpmate she was. And they met under the chuppah. So, all right, I do agree with my grandson. Other grandchildren always give me a dig. But you're lucky, you're fortunate, you met your wife in B'nai Akiva. That's true. I met my wife, who was a madrich, in Reed, Washington, see how I met her. She was fresh and shut back at me. And I knew right away that was the girl I was going to marry. I was all of 17, she was 15 at the time. So that's another way to save life, is to meet.
But there's now a reality program.
Right.
That does exactly that. Experts come together.
Right.
And they make matches.
And what's the percentage of survival?
It's probably around 50%.
50 to 60%.
And they meet for the first time.
I want 90%. Okay. I want 90+. All right. Anyway, let's come back here. So Jewish Action is a very fascinating magazine. I have to give a Jewish Action. Did I say Jewish Action, right? Okay, not Jewish Life. It's the continuation of Jewish Life. It's a very impressive magazine. They touch upon themes that are real, and they deal with the real world. So here they're dealing with the Shabbos table. How do we keep it alive? How do we keep the children interested? It's an interview. Interviews by the editor of different people. So one of the people they interview, Rabbi Sender and Chani Haber. Rabbi Sender and Chani Haber, who lived in Norfolk, Virginia, as told to Steve Lipman. Steve Lipman writes for the Jewish Action. I've seen him write for Jewish, what's it called, Jewish Week. And And here they're writing, they're involved in the rabbinate, Norfolk Jewish community, and Norfolk Naval Station nearby, the largest naval base in the world. About 100 Jews are stationed there at any time. Many of our guests are not Shomer Shabbos. Some drive to us, but they always know that they are invited to stay for the entire Shabbos. We learned the principle of tolerance growing up in rabbinical homes out of town. One example, when I, Sender, was a child in Buffalo, my father, Rabbi Yaakov Haber, once invited a man about 80 years old who had recently come from the former Soviet Union. The man was a violinist. He arrived at our house before the meal, carrying his violin in a case. When my father came home from shul, the man took the violin out of his case and began serenading my father with his violin. He played Heivenu Shalom Aleichem. He didn't know you're not supposed to play musical instruments on Shabbat. It was his way of giving thanks. Now, how would you react? This is Friday night in your house with your family sitting there. My father didn't react. Instead, after the performance ended, he told the man that it was better not to play the violin on Shabbos. The man was not insulted. He came back the next week without the violin. My father acted the same way when guests did other things at our table that are forbidden on Shabbos, like writing. We strive to accept our guests as they are. Inevitably, they will leave with a greater understanding and appreciation of how we observe and cherish Shabbat. No, a moving description. Think about it. Your father comes home from shul, and here, a Jew with a violin, just out of Russia, is serenading him on Shabbat. But, Effie, let's show that the Rebbe is a little bit open-minded. We quoted from Jewish Action. Let us quote from Mishpacha. Tova, I have to be honest with you. I love Mishpacha, but I cannot subscribe to it.
I read Jewish Action.
Do you know why I can't subscribe to it? Because they are over more than an Isidioraita. It's uprooting basic understanding of Torah. If you don't have pictures of women, you know what you're saying? When you take the Chafetz Chaim Ami magazine, I still shake, I shiver. You block out the Chafetz Chaim's wife's face. What is she, a sex siren? And what are we all, lustful, sinful men? It's terrible. Terrible, what that, the message it conveys. The sex is not to be frightened of, it's to be sanctified. It's the secret of our existence. Listen to my lectures on sex and marriage that I gave before many of you were born. It's all in the Kollel, it's on YU Torah. Can't we do it now? We have what we have to do. I have enough I have to get out in the next 10 years so I can finish the history of Torah in the United States. Mishpacha magazine, May 15th, 2019. Here. Photograph the cover. Here's the man we're going to talk about. Anyone here from South Africa? Did you hear from Dayan Moshe Aaron Kurstak? All right, very interesting. He must be about my age. And he has to be about my age. What's his story? Born to parents who ran away from Hitler, Poland, reached Israel, Palestine shortly before the Holocaust. His father, Yehoshua Gershon, his mother, passionate religious Zionist. Passionate. His mother had studied with Sarah Schneerer in Beis Yaakov in Krakow yet. Married, both reached Israel, immigrants, and married in Tel Aviv. And they gave the kid a good religious Zionist education, including the Yeshiva Chadash in Tel Aviv. Now, that yeshiva is very interesting. It was a high school. It was founded by Mizrahi people. But in the 1940s, into the 50s, into the 60s, basically, the Mizrahi school system had one tremendous problem. Lamdanim to teach, 90% came from the more traditional, classic yeshivat. And they had some influence on many students who wound up in the more Haredi world. This does not exist today by far, because today we have an entire world of Mizrahi yeshivat, Hezdi yeshivat, regular yeshivat, and we've raised Melamdin and Rashi Yeshiva and Ramim, all religious Zionists, to perpetuate religious Zionism. But that was not always the case. And these are facts. I'm not taking any side. Learning Torah. HaChadash, Yishuv HaChadash, the famous yeshiva in Tel Aviv. So this kid winds up in Hebron, the real Hebron, the original Hebron, not the Hebron opposite Machon Lev and Machon Grus, but Hebron in Geula, that Rakefet yet visited many times. And he winds up a fine Talmud Chacham, very close to the Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Simchel Zissel Broida, who himself, again, it was a different world. The present Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron happens to be my cousin, except he doesn't know it. One day, yeah, what Kalvariskis, that's how I relate. He happens to be related to Rabbi Revel. He's a blood relative of Rabbi Revel, just as I am. We're all Kalvariskis on our mother's side. And one day I'm going to walk in there, Beli Neder, and introduce myself to him, for better or for worse. But no, I know what I'm saying. So this kid winds up, and Rav Simcha Zen, anyway. There's a Litvish Rav in South Africa, and here you have to understand the South African community. We spoke about it many times. The South African community was a Litvish community, but 90% of the Litvakin who wound up in South Africa became Mechalalei Shabbos, but they retained a feeling to Yiddishkeit, to Zionism. It's a very unique community. Later in life, it exploded into Balei Tshuva, and I need not tell you, in South Africa today, they say onto 50% of the community is Shomer Shabbos, and out of that 50%, 90% or more are Balei Tshuva. There's a tremendous aliyah to Israel. You're always going to bunk into South Africans here, go to Ranana, and you'll wind up in three different shuls where the only language you hear is English. Dov, have you been to Ranana on a Shabbat? On a Sunday, you think you're back in Teaneck, you're back in Johannesburg, you're back in Cape Town. Fine. So they make a shidduch for him with this Litvish Rav's daughter from South Africa. They looked for a chassan, they came to Hebron Yeshiva, they spoke with the Rosh Yeshiva Rav Tzvi Breida, and he was a well-known, very open for, you got to read about who Rav Breida was. I know many of his students, I know many people who knew him very well. Very open. Hebron at that time was quite open. Even today it's more open than some of the other Litvish Yeshivat. So they make the shidduch. And I got to give his father credit. It took them a long time to convince the father to go to South Africa for the wedding. He didn't want to leave Israel. And I know many people like that, survivors who refused to speak German. I know people who came from Germany and never spoke German again on principle. I once was told off that I'm talking English to my neighbor Sam Dershowitz. And I was told off by German immigrants who came in the late 30s. I know there's a bench, Halberstam, dedicated in their memory on Rehov Rav Berlin. And he said, "I lo medaber mila begermanit, lamrot shezot hayta shfatem sheli, v'atem mefapetim beanglit." Well, I answered him. I'm ashamed. I shouldn't have answered him so sharply. I said, "Yesh hevdel echad beinenu. Ata alita barachta mehitla. Ani aliti kome miyut. Ani lo barachti me'af echad. Barchati la'alot atza berina." And they're not mitvayesh, svatem sheli, anglit, zenachon, hanechadim sheli, bedabrim, habanim sheli, habanat sheli, vamanechadim sheli, vahaninim sheli, bedabrim, evit kacha, kamo chuchu train. Shit. Rakevet. Okay, not rakevet, but rakevet. So finally, they go to South Africa for the wedding. And he's introduced to the rabbinate there. He later becomes a dayan, and when he describes, "I come to the shul, which my father-in-law has arranged for me to be the rav. It was a large Orthodox shul, but I couldn't believe how many cars were pulling up on Shabbos. Who had I married, I wonder? The daughter of a reform rabbi?" Could you imagine a kid from Yeshiva Chadash, from Chevron? Here he is in South Africa, Shabbos, and Johannesburg, big shul, and cars are pulling up one after another. South Africa has a very interesting Jewish community, he says. We're talking about the rabbi, Kutzrak, is speaking. "I call it the Litvak gene. There is an abiding respect for Torah no matter how little halacha a person keeps. I remember a fellow who learned in a great Lithuanian yeshiva because coming to South Africa. When I met him, he was no longer frum. But nothing made him more excited than hearing a gute shtickle Torah. There was another man who left the Torah, the path of Torah, so completely he didn't even keep Shabbos. Then he returned and wrote a Lamdisha Sefer." And he goes on, and he mentions, "I remember some people would attend Shabbos morning davening, then go straight to work. Then there was a friend of my father-in-law's from yeshiva, no longer mitzvah observant, but who would attend the regular shia, and one night he mentioned he had yahrzeit. So he took the Yomad from Marib and began davening with such intensity that he began to cry. This man had come to South Africa to be a sheikhet, but somehow wound up dropping everything. These people, they didn't keep Shabbos, but they had great respect for yeshivas and rabbanim. The fruit of that abiding respect for tradition and for Torah blossomed years later when the children and grandchildren of this non-observant yet Orthodox affiliated generation returned to observance in astounding numbers. Virtually everything you see today in South Africa," Dayan Krustak says, "comes from parents who were not particularly frum, but felt eminently comfortable in an Orthodox shul. We saw all these families pulling up the shul in their cars. Now their grandchildren are learning in the mir yeshiva." I don't have to go further. It's a beautiful statement, a beautiful description, and as someone who was a guest of this community in 2002. I spent a whole month there. So I'll never forget what the head of the Chevra Kadisha told me. He said to me, I even remember his name, Monty Nussbaum. And Monty said to me, "I'm born from what's the word you use? From birth. But he says in the Chevra Kadisha, we have a rule. No one can be a member until they've been Shemesh Shabbos for 10 years. Very interesting. Wants to be sure, Chazaka, that it's lasting, that it's keeping, that it's part and parcel of the person who will handle the burials. Let me go one step further. Here we're going to get involved. How many of you have heard of Itri? Who founded Itri? Rabbi Mordechai Elephant. When I came in Aliyah 50 plus years ago, I was told, if you have any problem whatsoever, either contact a Chabadnik named Rabbi Shmuel Shulson, Vice Mayor of Jerusalem, or a Litvish Rosh Yeshiva named Rabbi Mordechai Elephant, Rosh Yeshiva, founder of Itri. These two men owned Yerushalayim. Rabbi Shulson, those of you who live in Har Nof, the main street is named Rehov Shulson. It's named after him. Mordechai Elephant, Ani Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, I humbly thank the good Lord that I never had a contact, not Rabbi Shulson and not Rabbi Elephant. Now, Rabbi Elephant was a character par excellence. Lamdin Mufak, big in Kudshim, Talmud of Rabaran Kutla, businessman dealing in, by today's standards, billions, not just millions. Knew every politician, come, go, build, wow. Character par excellence. A memoir of his that they just typed. The whole memoir is here and it's up for grabs afterwards. A memoir. English, it's native language. Rabbi Pinny Dunner suggests that it should be titled An Elephant Never Forgets. A number of students sent me the memoir. What surfaces, Dove, you better watch everything you say, because whatever we say, whatever it's photographed today, it's on a video, it's in the computer, read my insurance. I read the memoir, I have to be honest. I couldn't put it down. It's about 100 pages or so. And I reached the conclusion he is 50% gadol, 50% gangster. I then called my grandson, who happens to be married to his great niece. He had no children. And I said, Yaakov, I have something for you and Batya, second to none. I'm leaving it in your mailbox tomorrow morning on my way to Christmas. My grandson lives in Rehov Shachar, so it's right near here. My great-grandchildren live there. It's more important than already the grandchildren. So, Kanayin Hara, good kids. So I drop it off. He calls me back 2 days later. Sabi, you're wrong. 2/3 gangster, 1/3 gadol. Finally, this summer in Lakewood, I'm being honored by Lakewood Yeshivas, you know. I gave out the pictures last Monday, so you don't have to believe me. You saw it with your own eyes. So, we have a student Monday whose wife's father was a chavruta of Rabaran Kutla in Kletz. 1 second.
I got a phone call from Boston from Matthew's sister. He wants to know why you were honored by Lakewood.
Honored by, very simple. There are many students listening to my Sheyurim. There are many people in Lakewood that have been strengthened in their emunah and their way of life by my shiurim. My description of Rabaran Kutler in Washington is second to none, what's been written about him. And my Sherman Rabaran, I say, the most honest in the world. And they greatly enjoy my critique some people who learned in Lakewood and went off the path, like David Hartman, you understand? So, Baruch Hashem, there are many reasons why, and I learned in Lakewood, my heart is pure, and I knew Rabban Kotler intimately. I had to tell his own descendants about Rabban and my conversations, but let's leave that out now.
Dealing with the Rebbe,
but we have to understand the Rebbe. I have an insight to the Rebbe that not many people have because of my relationship with the family, with the Rebbe's family.
The seventh Rebbe.
Yeah, no, but it's more than that, Baruch Hashem. But leave that out now. So in Lakewood, we were talking about the Rebbe. They said, you're wrong and your grandchildren are wrong. 99% gangster, 1%. All right, you can take it as you wish. The memoir is unbelievable, and I hope it'll be edited and published, and I'm mentioned in the memoir. Effie, you wonder what the heck does the Rebbe have to do with money and billions and gangsters? Very simple. He mentions in my book on the Rav, his picture appears. Are you familiar with the Rav? The Sheva Brachas in Reb David Lipschitz's house, there's Reb Mordechai Elephant leaning forward. I identify him, so he lives on. Anyway, believe me, if he did what he did, and he can commandable Gaddafi, and with Joe DiMaggio, to me he's a hero. Whether he's this much gangster, this much London, to me he's a hero. But now I want to talk. So he marries a girl from a very fine, firm family, from the Herman family in America. It's one of the few families that remain totally firm. And she was, this is a unique family, all for the boss, right? You know the books that have been written. She's part of that family. And she, and they get married, and you got to read the memoir, and she has to put up with him and his mishigas, and he's mixing with the wealthiest people in the world, and he invites one of these people, Ed Fattusi. I'm quoting from page 85 of the memoir. One day I invite him to New York and he stays in my apartment. One day the phone rings and the son of the Odeon, owner of Cartier, wants to talk with him. That's the type of people he hangs out with. One Shabbos, the owner of Pereir, if I'm pronouncing it right, P-E-R-R-I-E-R, called him. He answers the phone. I don't say anything. My wife got angry and really laced into me. She told me I have no more respect for Shabbos than a guy. I told her, I'm not a missionary. I invited the guy. I have to give him my home. He has his bathroom and his telephone. He does what he wants to do. She couldn't take it. She ran to a neighbor, Shlomo Mandel, who ran, and there's the name of a school here, but they didn't pick up the exact name. He would stay with us in Jerusalem in the summer with his family and 10 of his students. Goldie told him she's sending him over a kid named Fattusi, and he has to make him into an observant Jew. He did. Ed Fattusi's area of expertise was impressionist paintings. He was a very brainy kid. You couldn't work on his emotions. I saw that he was attracted to the works of the Maharal, so I set him up with Rabbi Moshe Shapiro, the expert in the Maharal. I got him married off to a very special woman. She's from a very famous Sephardic family, Ben Amran. She was private secretary to Yair Saban when he was minister of absorption. And I think he was left of left. Yitzchak, am I right? He now learns Torah 19 hours a day. Ed studies Torah for 4 weeks straight, then flies to America for 2 or 3 days to make some money as an art expert. Then he comes right home. He never wants to earn more than he needs. No? What do you say? This is Mordechai Elephant. His wife is furious at him. Who was right? Who was wrong? Okay? I won't be able to finish this today. I'm almost finished.
You're not talking about someone who's inviting Shabbos. This is a man who actually picked up the phone on Shabbos.
On Shabbos in his house, and he didn't say a word. He's my guest. Freedom of choice.
Who picked up the phone? The elephant or the
elephant? No, elephant didn't pick up the phone. The guy he invited, but his wife was angry. You invite someone to our house and you let him be Mechalel Shabbos? She was furious. She ran to complain. Shlomo Mendel, Baruch Atah Adonai Melech Olam Shekhon Yevdorah. Okay. Here's another contemporary tshuva. And this is very, very fascinating. And who are we talking about here? All right. It's Rosh Hirius. Okay, Shmuel Pinchasi. I have to thank a Talmud, a sub-Talmud. You know what that means, right, Effie? I invented the word. I don't like the word virtual. Sub-Talmud, because when I meet them, they surface like submarines. I'll walk in, I'll be in, I have two commitments to eat in the Laron, the Inbal, on Sukkot. You'll see what will happen to me when I walk in, try to keep my head down. Mm-hmm. So this Talmud, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Moshe Mustashi. Moshe Mustashi. And you see, the worst thing is ManhattanDayschool.MDYS school organization. So maybe it's Manhattan Day School. So he's evidently from the Upper West Side. So he, obviously from the name you see, he's Sfadi. M-D-Y school.
Magen David Yeshiva.
Magen David Yeshiva. So that's from Flatbush. Thank you. And that explains the Sfadic name and the Sfadic connection. So he sends me a copy of a tshuva on this very topic from Harav Shmuel Pinchasi. The name of the sefer is Minchat Shmuel Siman Tet. Again, I repeat, Minchat Shmuel Siman Tet, Harav Shmuel Pinchasi. So I wrote back to Moshe, who is he? I never heard of the name. I know the Pinchasi family, I know the Rabbanim from the family, but who is he? Rabbi Shmuel Pinchaski, he answered me, is Rosh Kolel of Dakhe David in the Makab Baruch Geula area, where he also serves as the head of the Beit Din. He is the Rav of a Kehila in Hanov called Imre Shefa. And that's also the name of his Sefer on the Pasha. Rabbi Pinchasi has been very close to the Sfada community of Brooklyn and Deal, and many of his tshuvot are addressed to them. He was very close to Chacham Ovadya Yosef, and his writings show the same linyan koach de chetera method. And beautiful. Oh, he writes at the end, although I'm only 31 years old, I've been involved in responsive literature going back to my high school years. The last year and a half, I gave a halachic shiur in the midst of discussing the Pasha, culminating with a responsum from a different posek every year. I wanted my students to learn who the Rabbanim really were. It is after one of these classes someone mentioned that I should listen to your shayurim, and I have been hooked. Thank you so much. All right, at least he's not hooked on drugs or liquor. It's, I hope, something much better. All right, what's the question? This very question. Nish'alti b'ben aliyah shechaza b'tshuva. האם מותר להזמין זוג חברים שאינם שומרי שבת לסעודת שבת או חג כשברור לו שאותו זוג לא יישאר כל השבת אצלו ויעדיפו למסור בחזרה בשבת? Wow. So when people became from תשובה is the secret of our existence. One person becomes frum. The minute you become frum, you start to understand that you're not complete, till every Jew is complete. Till all Yud Beit Shvatim are here. We have so much ahead of us. So you become excited. You want to reach out. You want to invite one of your old friends to visit Friday night. But you know he's going to drive. He's going to drive to you, and he's going to drive from you. Are you allowed? And more than that, what about parents? Parents want to come Friday night. Parents want to see you. Parents want to see the children. Are you allowed? This is exactly the question we have. Family, are you allowed? And I have to tell you, this is a haunting, haunting question. Of course, it goes right down the line. Not just parents, children, not just Lekarev. What about Leil HaSeder? The Rav was asked this question. You can hear it on tape. I've often quoted it. The Rav did not answer. He did not answer the question. He didn't know what to answer. Plain and simple. And it was this exact question. Leil HaSeder. Parents, if they're not at your Seder, they're not going to have a Seder. Have to drive. People in a senior citizen's home. And Leil HaSeder, there's an added factor. If you don't invite them, if they're not with the family, they're depressed. It affects their health. Remember, we now know that physical health, to a good degree, depends upon mental health as well. There's so much research done. They find older people, if you feel you're in your 90s, you'll be sick. If a person in their 90s says, I feel like I'm in my 50s, you understand? He's crazy, you're in your 90s. No, but psychologically, you feel you're in your 50s, it adds to your health, it adds to your energy. Parents, a Seder, people in an old age room, this is the question we're dealing with. And here you have a contemporary, someone alive right now and here, this very question. Now, what's amazing about this tshuva, and I'll show it to you next week, it's he cites all the sources, he's Mekil, and he knows everything we're speaking about, he knows Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he knows the Rav Sternbuch, which, you know, again, but what about Rav Moshe? Look how extreme Rav Moshe was. What, remember the words he used? Meseth u'media. What about Rav Moshe? And we'll hear next week what he tries to do to explain Rav Moshe. It is fascinating. Is he correct or not? All right, it leaves us thinking. Then I have one more source that I want to share with you. Again, contemporary. Right now in Petach Tikva, right now in Chabad, and show you the questions he raises. And then I want to shift gears and continue with the problem of Shabbos, but a different problem altogether. How many of you have been to Las Vegas? What were you doing in Las Vegas? Were you there to gamble, or were you there to attend a trade show? Nope. You know what Las Vegas is? I've been to Las Vegas a number of times, but I have to admit, I was there to teach Torah, not to gamble. One time, the people we went with insisted they gave us $10 to gamble and see what we come up with. I forget if we won, we lost, but Tanayin Hara. We were there many times. I have a brother living in a suburb of Las Vegas, Somerville. It's my kid brother. So I know what trade shows are. I've seen trade shows. No? Jack, you're selling computers, the latest gizmos, the latest gadgets. I have a grandson who was just in China. Now he was just in Berlin, and in a number of months he has to go to Hong Kong. His firm loves him because he speaks English. And you know why he speaks English? Because his grandparents forced it down his throat. This kid's attitude, what do I need English for? You know, but he got married, children in Hebrew, blah, blah, blah. Suddenly, he's kissing his grandparents' hands because he knows English. No, you go to a trade show. Yitzchak, trade shows generally begin Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're not going to miss Saturday, Sunday for obvious reasons. What do you do with your little division, trade show, Shabbos? Close it, put up a sign, get a Gentile to stand there. What a fascinating question. But all right, we will roll. To reiterate, first of all, I'm very happy to see the Wagner faces. It brings back a lot of pleasant memories. You know what I did, right? The weekend in Long Beach, right? Your aunt came, and I started to pay back a debt I still hadn't paid back, the entire debt, and it haunts me. It haunts me. I spoke with your uncle. Your aunt. Anyway, his aunt by marriage is Rabbi Belkin's daughter. Granddaughter. I'm skipping a generation. At my age, that's okay to skip generations. But you correct me. That's your role, is to correct me. It's Rabbi Belkin's granddaughter. And her mother came to hear me speak on my new book, which I'm speaking about in Beit Shemesh again, and then we'll have something in Yerushalayim. Of course, the fourth part of the book you can't understand unless you hear it. If you can understand pictures, mixtures, new rakhetin is entertaining us with jokes. If you hear my lecture, you'll have enough material to think about for the next 7 years without the ligrisma on those documents and pictures. 7 years of thinking in Torah. Cheshbon HaNefesh. So Rabbi Belkin's daughter came, I introduced her, and I moved her father, Reb Shmuel, into the lecture. So, Baruch Hashem. What did we do today? We went further, and we dealt with Rabbi Asher Weiss, and memoir literature, the Haber home, the Johannesburg, Rabbi Mordechai Elephant. You got to read the memoir to understand the depths of what has been said. And he always boasted he's a gangster, but when I read the memoir, I see Kishmo Kenhu, he had what to boast about. He threw around hundreds of millions, he got Golda Meir, whatever. Later on, he lost favor. They got involved with gun running and something. I remember the headlines.
What did he get involved with?
I don't know. There was a bad thing with him, with the Chevron. I don't remember for sure, but all I know is it was front page news. They were arrested at entry into the airport. But as far as I know, they never went to jail. It was evidently settled. Gun running, money, dealing with Africa, etc., etc. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, at 9:05, we move into a different world altogether. And I'm telling you in advance, we're coming to lectures that are very, very unique in understanding what the big three accomplished. Willy-nilly, they had no intention of accomplishing, but the results were that they set up the demarcation between conservative and Torah. And that demarcation, we owe them the greatest credit in the world. And they did it, Kaliachiyat. It was not something they planned, but you'll see, I will prove every syllable I'm stating 100%. Now, the freebies. I made copies. Moshe, are you still a Talmud of Rabbi Asher Weiss? You don't read it, you study it. The first part of the new book, you don't read, you study. The second chapter, the third, say the day you can read. Excuse me, I hope I'm giving it out right. No, 1 second. One goes to Yitzchak, one here and here. And if anyone else wants a copy, Pashut Shoftim, here's the third copy, if anyone wants. If anyone wants, what do you have there?
This is Ani the Dodi the Dodi.
No. Pashut Shoftim. That's
it. Right. Shoftim, yes.
Okay, so there's another copy of Pashut Shoftim. This is a gift for you. Remember, I looked for it the other day. This is my DiMaggio Chesed. If anyone wants it, be careful. There's a wire there. If anyone wants it, tell me. That's the Chesed. It's on why you pay. Okay, 1 second. This obligates you. Pass that on.
You know, in the Mishpacha magazine, they had a whole article about this. Jews of Las Vegas.
Interesting. Okay, Chumim. If anyone's interested, this is the article that caused the atomic bomb and everyone yelling and shouting. It's by a professor, a Talmud of Rabbi Nachum Rabinovich. I don't know what he's professor of at Bar Ilan. and evidently a Talmud Chacham, a Rav Professor David Fixler. Are you allowed to eat in a vegan restaurant without hashgacha? And this is the famous article where he was matir, if you have no choice, but you have to see to it that the chametz is not wine, but it's made, it's not made from wine, and you have to tell them in the kitchen, if it is made from wine, not to put it into the food they're making for you. And he's matir, and it caused a tremendous storm. Yeah, in Chutz La'aretz, here in Israel, everything is under hashgacha. And it's a very interesting article, and Rabbi Whiteman, who I know, the editor of Tchumim, writes Ha'orot on the article, and he answers, and then there was a big outcry afterwards. I leave it to your shikul hadat. I can tell you in Kehillat, in Rabbi Lukstein's Kehillah, they would welcome this article, because they eat in restaurants that are not vegan, and they take salmon, double wrap it in silver foil. Now, these fancy restaurants know what to do for Jews that are willing to pay $100 a plate. So they wrap it in silver foil. And here, it's an interesting article. Gives all the problems with checking, etc. This is very moving. This is 9/11, if you still remember 9/11. I hope that they do in America. I start to doubt it. This is in memory of Shimi Biegeleisen. This is very moving to me because his brother is married to a dear student of mine. And we're always in touch every year. And this is Shimi, the brother who, lo aleinu, what happened, how he called his wife, how the Ramata the Aguna. Very interesting article that surfaced.
Big store, Biegeleisen.
That's the family, it's that family. Here, this is unbelievable. Now, this guy may have been my student in the 60s. He was in, when I started teaching in MTA, YU, Reitz at the time, he was in, I remember the name. Anyway, the shrink next door, this just broke. Big scandal, modern Orthodox. And the guy accusing him of taking over his home in the Hamptons,
right,
and making, but yeah, it's all over the internet. It's no Lashon Hara anymore. It's all over the place. But what's interesting, who he invited, the cream of Manhattan's modern Orthodox world, Rabbi Riskin and Rabbi Lukstein and Rabbi Arthur Schneier and Rabbi Mark Schneier and Rabbi Joe Talushkin. And we'll see. Again, a psychiatrist, you control the person's life. You can, you know, it is very dangerous. I know the way they work. I've watched, I've sat in sessions with people who I tried to help, and I see with my own eyes what they're capable of doing. And my own students, psychiatrist, you have to be a Yirei Shamayim and have to be a Lamdan Mufak. I wouldn't suggest being a psychiatrist unless you know Shas and Paiskim by heart.
But this guy was actually...
Well, that's what they say. That's what they say. Here is Rabbi Mordechai Elephant's memoir.
I'd like to read that.
Pass it on.
I'd be happy to share this with anybody.
One. Okay, now one second. And
is it on the internet anywhere?
What?
Is it on the internet anywhere?
It's on the... It has to be on the internet. But I don't ask me about the internet. It's been in other words. This... I apologize to Tova, but the Rebbe is still a little boy. That's the secret of his life. So this morning he already saw the Yankees won. The Yankees won in Baruch Hashem in Toronto. Gardner, little guy, hit two home runs. Paxton pitched well. Yazan Narishkaito, what can I do? You're a kid again. Anyway, Michael, this is for you. This is a whole article on what is the greatest thing that was ever fielded. I am so upset. What's the Shiloh, the 27 Yankees?
Well, that's what a Yankee fan says.
They come out that it could be the Yankee team of today may yet be one of the third or fourth grade, and they have a way of weighing it. I don't know what the heck they're talking about. You've got to be Yogi Berra to understand it. Here's a very interesting. Charlie Silvera, seldom seen Yankee catcher, dies at 94. And this guy has one quote here I love. He played in many World Series. He was a third string catcher. So everyone made fun of him, a third string catcher. He said, you can laugh all you want. My World Series shares are more than your whole salary. So he did okay for himself. Pass that back to Michael. Here is again the Yankees and their pitching, what they're going to do with starters. They now have a whole new system where you take a reliever, start him for two innings, and then you bring in a regular pitcher, and then you bring in a closer. And the Yankees have won almost every game they use this system. The New York Times analyzes it. And finally, Tyler Skaggs' death, the old problem, overdose on drugs, a major league player, found dead in July with fentanyl, oxycodone, and alcohol in his system. And that takes us back to the original question, what do you do with this terrible problem? And in the Torah world too, Kiddush on Shabbos, and kids, the finest scotch in the world. My grandchildren grew up in Katamon with all the Anglos. I hope the French take over and they don't drink so much scotch. And my grandchildren growing up in Yerushalayim, right? Fourth generation, their great-grandparents lived in Yerushalayim. And now I have fifth generation, great-grandchildren. My parents lived here. We brought them over. And these kids knew every fine scotch in the world. But I'm proud to say none of them overdose. In other words, they know their limits, and when they drive, I'm proud to say, I see at any family simcha, my grandchildren, the one who's driving, will not drink anything. Kol hakavod. But here's the problem, pass it on. Baseball, tchumim, no one interested in tchumim, I couldn't put this down. The halacha is, and my dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness, that magic word that Effie is yet to understand. Das vidanya. Got it or you don't got? Baruch Hashem, Tova Philemon. And Effie, did you read Washington? Do you know why the Rebbe says das vidanya? Tova will fill you in. You don't have to guess far. Tova, Gutta, what a beautiful name. Until we meet again in health and happiness. That's the Dutch.